Internet, heed this call. Open your minds and ears and prepare yourself to kneel before awe.
And welcome to episode 18 of Kneel Before Odd. I'm your host, Audrey Kearns, and this is a show where I interview geek patriots, all kinds of geek patriots. And my geek patriot guest today is Mr. Paul Preston.
Kneel before Odd.
People say that, right? Every time they come on
here?
Every single time.
Okay, I usually have to coach them.
Well, I wanted to be different, but
yeah.
Why would you want to be different than quoting the great Zod?
I know, right?
You want
right?
to just kind of fall in line when that happens.
Well, you're the first person to do it with so much inflection.
And, oh, really?
Thank you. Like happiness behind
was
it.
Was I Stampian in my approach?
You were Stampian.
Excellent.
You were Terrence Stampian in your approach, which brings me...
Yes?
That's a very good segue into what I always ask everybody what their nerd origin story is. And it's usually, you know, I'm talking to gamers and nerds and sci-fi fans. But you're like totally geeky about movies, right?
Yes.
So what's your nerd origin story?
Well, see, I think my movie origin story and my nerd origin story are the same thing.
Oh, okay.
So that's what put me on a path to total movie love.
Uh-huh.
When I was 7, my dad took me to see Star Wars. It's that story. I'm the guy with that story. My dad, you know, and up till then I had seen what? Unidentified Flying Oddball, The Cat from Outer Space, all these Disney movies, Apple Dumpling
right.
Gang. And these are great movies, you know, but I was not prepared.
You were not prepared.
The way my
for
dad
Star
undersold
Wars.
It. You know, I don't know what my dad enjoyed movie wise up until we saw Star Wars, but he's this thing looks kind of fun, it's in outer space to shoot lasers.
Uh-huh.
Let's go. And then I just like
you freaked
just,
out.
My jaw hit the floor.
When did it start? Like, did your jaw hit the floor in the very beginning with you know, long, long ago in a galaxy far? Like, was it right away?
Yeah.
Or when the ship, yeah.
Well, so it's the ship, too. I mean,
the
Star
ship
Wars,
starts
I'm like,
the
okay,
movie.
I get it.
Yeah.
And then the ship, I'm like, forget it, I'm in.
I've
never seen anything like this before in my life.
Wow.
You know, and when you're that young and impressionable, and then they hit you with the everything, hey, take it home with you. Have your own adventures in the driveway with these
right.
characters and these toys and everything. And I couldn't get enough. I soaked it all up. And it's such a digestible story for a kid who's...
Oh, absolutely.
Who's, let's say, very young.
Uh-huh.
You know, it just...
It put a lot of
hit.
People on a path, like our generation. It put a whole generation on a path of a certain kind of fandom and love for movies. I mean, there's never anything like that before. And I think I was... I'm a couple years older than you, so I was like 10 when I saw it. But it was the same thing. I mean, that Christmas, you know, we were over in Hong Kong at the time because my parents were in the military. And do you remember, like, since there was no internet back in our day, like going through like a Sears catalog or something and circling what you wanted Santa
oh,
to bring you?
Absolutely.
So we, you know, we did that, and we were lucky if we got 5% of what we wanted, just because my mom would have to order like months ahead of time from the States. But we did get our Luke and Leia doll.
Yeah, all the different things. They had the little peg where you could stick the character's foot,
yes.
the hole in the foot to make him stand up and do stuff on the Falcon. Or they even had a little thing that was just like a little standee where you just put them.
I never got them out, not put them in a case. We never got the ships or anything like that. My mom still gave us, like, at that time, it's still obviously that way with marketing now, where they market different things for girls and different things for boys. So we got the dolls, but it was among a bunch of other presents that were Barbies. So, but Luke and Leia were taller than all the other Barbies. So it was kind of like we were pretended they were giants. I mean, they were from Star Wars, but they were still giants with all the Barbies.
And crushing the Barbies.
Crushing, exactly. And then, because we had seen a soap opera by that time, we took all their clothes off and made them make out, Luke and Leia.
I was just going to say, did you totally do that and not knowing a
so
few years later?
So many girls
go,
did
no.
that growing up and then went and found out
the
dark truth.
I regret much of my childhood.
I'm very confused.
What? Yeah, that can confuse a small person.
So you saw the movie, you got the toys. Did your dad have a reaction to it, or was it just another movie he saw?
I don't recall anything quite like the reaction I had.
Right.
I mean, I don't think he was blasé about it. I think we both thought it was a pretty cool movie.
Uh-huh.
But they took me to see Empire Strikes Back because they knew, okay, this kid loves Star Wars.
Uh-huh.
And I came out of that movie, that I was 10 for that, and just crying. I thought they killed Han Solo.
Yeah.
I didn't quite get it.
I was young.
I was like, what? No. Hi. Like, I saw the steam come up, and next thing you know, he's in a frozen thing. I'm like, he's dead.
And
they're like, no. He's frozen. What do you mean? Frozen? No, he had to explain to me. And
I don't think we really understood the concept of sequels at that time. That, you know, I don't even know if it was known that there would be a sequel where we're going to see him again. And
right.
Yeah, yeah. So it was very, you know, I was really upset too. I don't think I cried, but I remember
being
upset.
I cried at the end
upset.
Of Jedi only because I figured we're done. There's no more. There's no more. And now
they should have been done
30 years later. But I mean, we're done with those people.
Yeah.
And we're not.
We're
like,
not.
How cool is that?
Yeah.
We're getting a sequel to Return of the Jedi. Unbelievable.
Yeah.
You're
yeah.
stoked. Come on. Tell me you're stoked.
I am stoked.
Yeah.
I mean, and it's just and all the announcements of movies that are on different paths, like coming from Star Wars, like different threads. They're going to be basically they're doing what the comic books are doing and taking characters, lesser known characters, and doing full movies about them. And I think that's going to be, you know, I think, well, Disney owns both now, so they've got the money to invest and spend. Mm-hmm. And plus they have the fans, which is the most important thing. I mean, we'll spend the money. We're
built
the ones
in.
That, I mean,
yeah.
It obviously had a deep, you know, effect on your life. And so we're going to spend the money to see what happens.
Oh my God. You mentioned briefly, just a you know, side note, this, oh, wish we didn't get those other movies we wanted from Star Wars, the prequels. They were sorely missing Han Solo. If not
yeah.
Han Solo, then the Han Solo element.
Yeah.
And the fact
that's a good point. I never thought of that.
Oh, that's absolutely what
yeah.
missing. And the fact that, I mean, perhaps Obi-Wan should have been that Han Solo type guy, but he can't be too much because he is a Jedi. He's got
yeah.
this whole code to go by. So there was just something missing in that respect.
Mm-hmm.
The outsider guy from the Jedi.
Right.
But the fact that that Harrison Ford, when he hurt himself on the set,
they
had to stall production so long means
uh-huh.
this isn't a cameo.
Yeah.
He's the guy.
Yeah.
And if he's the guy, I'm just so weirdly excited. I can't even tell you.
They were trying to sell it as a cameo. But, I mean, you're right. All those stories about, well, he didn't just sprain his ankle. It looks like he's going to be out for 6 months or so and production had to stop. Yeah, I remember.
Yeah, just shoot other things while he's hurt. No, can't. Why? Because he's got a huge
yeah.
part. Yes!
Yes,
which
and then you see
so
Mark Hamill
about.
Walking around with a beard and you're like, ah, he's older Jedi now. Okay.
Yeah, I want to see him dispense some wisdom and some
yeah.
badassery. I mean, I'm ready for it.
Absolutely.
People give him a hard time because of Tachi Station and all that.
Yeah.
But
we've had this conversation before.
We have, yeah, okay.
Yeah,
so,
yeah.
But yeah, but God,
you've lectured me.
Have I?
Yeah.
Well, his arc is just amazing.
Uh-huh.
Watch all three movies. The character he is at the end is not the one he is at the beginning. He's great.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm excited to see him get a part where he can be great again.
That's great. I
just had that with Michael Keaton in Birdman.
Oh, yeah?
Watching him be great again was the greatest thing in the world.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm throwing great around like it's nothing. But
I've heard it's great.
It's a very good film. But watching Keaton again, to see him, you know, with that Keaton patter he's got,
right,
you know,
right.
it just reminds, it's like return to form month for a lot of great actors. You
That's
know,
wonderful.
Because Affleck's back in a great movie after he gets a lot of crap for not being in good stuff, which is amazing to me because he does nothing but great projects nowadays.
Yeah.
So
I think he's just an easy, for some reason, it's an easy target.
Yeah, people still think Geely and Phantoms or whatever, but he's so beyond it now. And
I think also he does honestly look like a superhero. He's got that chiseled jaw and he's in great shape that sometimes people are a little biased and cynical and don't take him as seriously. And then there's Geely and all that kind of stuff.
And then that happened.
Which
he'll tell you, that happened.
Yeah.
But then, you know.
Well, he went on, didn't he go on The Tonight Show and read all his bad reviews out loud from that movie? It was from that movie or the movie after. It was like he did a couple like really stinkers in a row.
Oh yeah.
And he just went on and that was pretty much his whole interview. It's probably on YouTube where he just reads his bad reviews.
Good.
Yeah,
you gotta take that stuff on the chin.
Oh yeah. Yeah.
Speaking of which, we're going all over the place here. But Wars kid.
Mm-hmm.
Right, you know Star Wars kid. Playing with the mop handle and everything. I heard a story where his mom got so upset that these kids took that video of him and made it public and kind of wrecked this kid that she put the clamp down on everything right away with him. Like, you're not going out.
So he was punished.
We're going to sue these kids. No, well, kind of. She went after the kids who did it. And
okay.
She like wanted to sue them and sue whatever. Like a whole big thing. But you think he should just embrace it, right?
Well, I think
like the mom should have just embraced it. And can you imagine if he steps out into a Star Wars convention with the mop handle and just kind of sets it down on the ground? You're going to get 1,000 people going,
he can go to conventions, certain Star Wars conventions, and probably charge $50 for an autograph and people will pay for it to meet him. Because, I mean, he's, and I think what his, I think, you know, being a mom myself, there's this maternal instinct to protect right away. And that's why she put a claim. She's going to, you know, no one's going to.
That's a good point.
There's no one's going to go after my son. I, you know, no one's going to touch him. But what she didn't know and what he didn't know, because I'm sure he was just so embarrassed because he was being bullied and they were making fun of him, is that all the nerds that are our age now have some mad computer skills, you know, and they took that video and they made it a real lightsaber. Some was, you know, I'm sure you saw all of them. You know, there's one that's like a single lightsaber. I don't know what the names were. And then the Darth Maul double-edged one. I mean, there's music, there's animation.
They stuck him in The Matrix. They stuck him in Braveheart.
Yeah,
they put him in everything.
And he, like, and I hope she was able to embrace that understanding that, you know, we understand him, because the only reason he was outed is because he filmed himself. But we all did that when we were kids. How many times were me and my sister played Battlestar? Because we watched the old Battlestar Galactica when I was a kid. We played that like for like 3-4 hours straight in the backyard, complete role playing, you know. And I can't imagine if my friends at school, none of them knew, because we were allowed. This is when it was, so it's late 80s. No, it's the mid 80s. And it was like at 10 o'clock at night on some cable station on once a week, and we would stay up to watch it. You know, we had just moved to the States, and it was just the most amazing show we had ever seen on TV on this, because when we were in Hong Kong, we got two channels, you know, and it was, there were British shows. Thankfully, that's where I found Doctor Who, at least. It was such a great show. And yeah, we played for ages in the backyard, and I'm sure you did some crazy stuff with your little Star Wars.
Absolutely. Live action. We did more army when it was live action. You know, we'd be Americans going up against the Nazis. Yeah.
And how many times did you daydream of being a hero when you were a kid? It was nice to be a hero, and that's what he was doing. And these kids took a chance to make fun of him for it, but there was like a whole generation of people saying, nope, I know that kid. I know exactly what he's going through.
Yeah, he's got a legion of people.
I mean, he met George Lucas, didn't he?
I wonder.
I
hope so.
Everybody looked that up, because I don't know if I'm right, but I'm pretty sure that George Lucas reached out to him somehow, or at least some of the Star Wars people did. I forget how that went down, but I remember reading that. So,
but like Affleck, like, you know, one of the great examples is Jeff Bridges, who, like, when you call him the dude or something, he doesn't go, hey, man, that's, you know, a movie, and I'm not that.
The dude.
He's like, hey, you know, he's like all nuts about it. And
didn't he just throw out the first pitch? Was that what you were going to say?
He did. At the Dodger game, he bowled it because he embraced it. I mean, you got to embrace that stuff and have fun with it.
And the thing with him, you know, I think, I don't know how other iconic actors handle this, if they're only iconic in one genre, you know, where Bridges is so versatile.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, he, Fisher King and all the different movies.
He's got an Oscar for the genre that he's not probably most famous for. He's probably most famous for Tron and Starman.
Right, right.
And like
what
that.
Was the, he was like a country singer?
That was Crazy Heart he won
Crazy
the Oscar
Heart
for,
is what he won the Oscar for. So he's such a versatile guy that he, and like you said, he embraced it. Now, I totally wasn't even thinking of Tron.
Oh, yeah.
I totally wasn't thinking of Tron, but yeah.
But yeah, you throw up that guy, forget about it. You start talking about his career. Be like, oh, yeah, we have a little game.
Yeah.
We play on my show called That's Right. And it'll be when we bring up some actor. Oh, that's right. He was you know, like Robin Williams, when he passed away, you could play That's Right with all the movies you forgot he was in.
Well, yeah, everybody after he died was writing, there's blogs galore, you know, on how Williams affected them personally, you know. It was like an internet full of journal entries when Robin Williams died. But if you were reading them, you were doing the That's Right thing. Oh, that movie affected them. I forgot he was even in that movie.
That's
it's not just the same movie that, you know.
Right.
That's right. He was in that. Oh, my goodness. So where did you grow up?
Upstate New York, where there wasn't much going on beyond movies.
It's like a small town?
Yeah, about 20,000 people, I think, with college in session.
Where was the closest big city?
Is Albany big?
Well, it's the capital.
About an hour from Albany, an hour from Binghamton. There's a stretch there called the 88, Interstate 88, between Binghamton and Albany. We're right smack in the middle, just north of the Catskills.
Oh, wow.
So we're 3 hours from New York City.
You got some rough, cold winters up there?
Yeah, which is why I'm here now. I'm here in Los Angeles.
Funny. How old were you when you moved out here?
30.
30?
Yeah.
Did you...
Took a while.
Did you go to college?
Oh, yeah.
In New York?
Yeah, well, I went to school near Buffalo at a place called State University of New York at Fredonia, which also is great because I'm like, from the Marx Brothers? As, again, my movie geekery showing.
Well, here's a little movie geekery trivia for you. I took when I first moved here, this is before the second Battlestar, I took an acting class with Mary McDonnell.
Ah, yes. Fredonia's Own.
Yeah, and yes. And I remember her talking. I'd never heard that name before. And I remember her talking about Fredonia. So,
I met her. She came back and did. She's gone back a number of times.
Oh,
and
really?
Done some speaking. Well, I mean.
And her husband's from there, too, Randall Mell, because he would teach.
I think so.
She would teach. Like, I think she got the Battlestar job during that class. Because all of a sudden, he just said she got a job in Canada, and he taught the rest. And he was amazing. He was an amazing teacher, too, Randy Mell or Randall Mell. Yeah. But I was just like, oh, my God. I realized years later, I took a class with President Roslin.
Yeah, right? Cool.
when she
was a big deal when I was in school because of Dances with Wolves.
Right,
the Oscar
nomination.
And Sneakers. And
then Passion Fish.
Some other good movies like that. But Battlestar took her to a whole different thing. Now she's like Miss TV. She was on a show after that. Was she on The Closer or something for a while? Or she's on some other
TNT? I don't
TNT.
Know. I know she was on some kind of like crime drama.
Yeah, she's on
thing.
One now.
Yeah. And she was like one of those, I don't know if she's, I would assume she is into the Meisner technique and everything, but she was like one of those teachers, like get down and crawl around and.
Oh, really?
Yeah, I am just not that kind of actor, which was a great thing for me to take that class because I got to, you know, try some things that scared me, but.
I study Meisner and I was talking about that after class last night with somebody. It's like, you know, you can see so much of people's personality and their performances, and that's a lot of Meisner. You bring yourself to the role.
Yeah.
So what's the deal with Daniel Day-Lewis? That was a conversation last night, because I've seen that dude stutter around an interview, and he's not very engaging, and he's kind of muttering, but then when he turns on Bill the Butcher, it's the scariest thing you've ever seen in your life. So I got to find out that guy's method, because I don't know how he goes from 0 to 60.
I mean, from what I've read, you know, and I think he can afford this. I think he probably could always afford to do this, because I believe his dad was the Poet Laureate of England.
Mm.
And so I don't know if that means you have money, but I'm assuming it means...
For the arts? Well, you know, for poetry?
Yeah.
Is there money in that?
I don't know. But he has the luxury of, because he's a method actor, he actually just goes away for a month.
Now they say
he immerses himself in the role, and that works for some people that are great actors, and it doesn't work for other people that are great actors. You know, I think that's the great thing about acting is finding your own method that works for you. And I'm certainly no Daniel Day-Lewis, but I do get the thing like when I'm out, like my husband's a television writer, and we're out, and somebody will say, "What do you do?" And you know, say I'm an actor. You know, that'll always come up. You're an actor. And it's always so insulting, but it's really coming out of like shock and surprise. And I'll just look at them. And I've lately started questioning them. Usually I would just take it internally and go home and cry. And I realized that's not good for you.
So no.
I started asking, why would you say that?
That turns into tumors.
Realized that. long bouts of depression. And no. And it was always, you're so quiet. You're so quiet. Oh. I'm just like, well, fuck you. You don't have to be loud. You don't even have to be loud.
Would you pay a ticket to take my order?
Yeah. You know, you don't even have to be allowed to do comedy and stuff like that. It's just everybody has their own method. But that is the one thing I did learn from Meisner, is how to be a little more open to things as far as like crawling around pretending you're a lion. I still would think, I'm crawling around pretending I'm a lion. Well, I don't get it.
You come from improv, right? So the Meisner is kind of just telling you to be in the moment with your partner, prepare everything with the text and your set of circumstances and your character, but then just play off your partner.
Yeah.
So it's kind of a lateral move from improv, even though it's still challenging.
Yeah, yeah.
But whatever Mary McDonald does, I totally bought her as Rosalind.
Oh, yeah, she's wonderful.
I'm in season 3 on that.
Oh, dude. Okay, so...
Because I keep getting distracted by things like having to watch all 5 seasons of Breaking Bad. You know, and then I'll go back to Battlestar Galactica. Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, yeah. We just actually, we were late to the game on that. And we just finished about 3 months ago, and my stepdaughter, who 21, doesn't watch TV really. Every once in a while she'll get into a show, and Mad Men's the first show we started watching as a family, which is a weird dysfunctional one to watch.
Yes.
And then Breaking Bad is the first show the 3 of us sat down and watched from beginning to end. And it's just at the end, we're just like, oh, I guess we're not going to hang out anymore. This is kind of fucked up, but okay.
Yeah, exactly. And what can you watch now?
Yeah, you
watch Walking Dead together? Oh, well.
No. Like, I tried my hardest because, I mean, she's my stepdaughter, but she's my daughter because I've been around.
The bird's left the nest, right? So you only watch stuff every once in a while.
You know, I've had her around since she was a baby. I've been there for her entire life, and I still wasn't able to make her a nerd. It's like one of my biggest life disappointments. She doesn't like Star Trek. She thinks it's stupid. She'll walk through and say, I'm watching a paranormal show or Arrow or something like that, and she'll hear a line about a caped man and this and this, and she'll just laugh right in my face, and it's just so hurtful.
Yeah,
so hurtful.
Ask her if she knows the significance of the title Kneel Before Odd. If she can't tell you,
she had no idea.
Let her go.
She just thought it was a funny sounding thing, and I was like, "You have no idea what that means." And she's like, "No," and I'm like, "Okay, all right, well, I tried." But she's a super smart girl, and
which means she'll come around.
She'll come around. She'll understand. So, when you went to Fredonia, were you studying acting?
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And when you moved out here, you moved out. Had you met your wife yet? Did you guys move out together?
We met at college.
Yeah.
College sweeties.
I was college sweeties with my guy too.
And then we studied at Second City in Toronto and Chicago. And then once we got a job on a cruise ship doing improv, that was it.
Oh, you did?
Yeah.
Oh, how long did you do the cruise ship thing?
We did 4 months, and we took a couple months off and then did another four because it was great money.
Right.
And we're going to the Bahamas. And that was it for Cold Places.
That was it. Then you were done. Then you were done. So we met, I'd say about, was it 10 years ago, probably?
Yep.
Approximately. We were working at
11.
Working at a theme park together in the same show. And we got to know each other there. Did you enjoy?
Are you retired? I'm retired now from theme parks.
I'm retired from theme parks. Yeah. I left, I think, 5 years after we got that job, and I was like, I'm done.
Yeah. I vendor out for like my production stuff for special events and things, but performing in theme parks, retired.
Yeah, I'm retired.
Yeah. Had a good run.
I enjoyed it. And it was good money when you got to work.
Yeah. You know, it's good as long as it schedule remains flexible, and it often does for actors. It's good.
Yeah. Yeah. And I think one of the misconceptions about working in a theme park, at least I had this. I mean, I started working in theme parks back in Orlando because I lived there for 8 years. And
is there anything else to do there?
No.
Yeah, you're in Orlando. What do you do? I work at Dunkin' Donuts. No, you don't.
The cool thing about Orlando is they have a thriving theater scene that I don't know if a lot of people realize, like a really good theater scene. And it's a great thing to work in the theme parks during the day and go do your shows at night that you're doing out of your own pocket. And then we ended up establishing a theater company and stuff like that when we were there. So it was still out of our own pockets, but it was, we worked very hard to get that audience. But there were days where like I would do like a children's show at the Civic Theater in the morning, which I got paid for. I'd go to my noon shift at the theme park. And then at night I'd either go do my own show or go to the Murder Mystery Dinner Theater and get another $50 for doing a show.
I've done plenty of those.
Yeah.
Also retired, but I've done plenty of those in my time. Yeah.
But you definitely can make a living. And well, before 9/11, there's a lot of I don't know what it's like now. It was really slow when we left. There's a really thriving convention business that you can get all kinds of gigs for. We started booking conventions for production companies, talent, and stuff like that, and we really made good money doing that. It kind of slowed down because people weren't traveling as much, but I don't know if people have if it's started back up again or not.
Yeah, I wonder if some people down there just go to a theme park all day and then you would go to work, and then night comes, well, what do we do? And then they could go see a show. There's probably spillover tourism that you just take advantage of.
Right. And then
it's probably going on in Anaheim, too. We should probably get down there and take advantage of that.
Come on. Because I know plenty of people that have their lifers at theme parks, and they've raised families. They've bought houses. And, you know, I just never was. I never got a life. My contracts were always very precarious. Like, I never knew if they were going to stick or not. Like, you know, most people do move into the management side of it. Although I know a guy in Orlando who started out as an actor, and now he's running the entire Halloween Horror Nights. He writes it for the ones from Orlando.
Is that right?
Yeah, he does. Mike Aiello. He comes out to this Universal, I think, a few times a year too. But he's doing really well.
Yeah,
you
stick with it. There's that kind of upward movement. I think the current CEO of Universal was in retail. So
there you go.
You know.
Yeah. So you just mentioned production. So you do a lot of film production as well. You're well learned in that area.
Yes.
Right?
I'm learned.
You're learned.
Yeah.
Did you start doing that from your love of movies, or is it something you just fell into?
Yes and no. I decided about halfway through my time living here that I just didn't want to wait tables or work at a bank mm-hmm. or anything I hated for my living.
Mm-hmm.
So I started a production company because I do like – I actually was going to go to film school before I went to acting. I would have mm-hmm. gone to either.
Right.
But acting school was cheaper. So I ended up going there because it was affordable and then stuck with it and mm-hmm. always loved it. So
yeah.
Now the whole process of making films, as everyone knows, but also was apparent when I first moved here, it's just gotten so much cheaper.
You need
$3,000 to buy and develop all this film. Or mm-hmm. you can buy $2-$4 mini DV tapes
yeah.
and shoot something that looks similar. Oh, well, I'm in for that. And, of course, now tapes are even gone, and everything is so accessible that just I've come right around now to being a actor and sort of a filmmaker at the same time.
That's great. I love the do-it-yourself nature of, you know, or what you can learn nowadays. I remember back when we first moved to Orlando, when the minimum wage was $5 an hour, and we were doing one of our first comedy shows where all of our cues were going to be on disc, and that was new, you know, because we our first
DAT? I had mine on DAT.
Well, our first yeah. was reel to reel. I mean,
our first was cassette tapes. The guy would pop a new one yeah. for every cue
oh,
we
really?
Had in our comedy
then
show.
We had done that too, but then we had a guy who was even more, you know, he was like in the early 90s, who was considered old school, where he was like splicing stuff and taping it back together on our reel to reel, our cues like that. Yeah, and so.
Someone had the patience to do that when you weren't paying them.
I know, it's crazy. And so, you know, the CD came out, the compact disc.
Yeah.
But we had to go somewhere and get it mixed. And we got confused about the price. And we went to pick it up. It was $50. And like I said, this is back when minimum wage was $5 an hour.
Right.
And we were just like, what?
A day and a half of work right there.
Yeah. Yeah. And so we got, and that was like 10 cues for $50. And can you imagine that now? I mean, you just put it, you don't even use a disc,
yeah.
you know, you just put it on your computer.
Yeah, you slap it together. We do that yeah. every week. Yeah, like it's no
what
big
did
thing.
You first start doing when you got learned? Were you doing, in other words, were you making shorts for yourself?
Oh.
Were you outsourcing work or?
Yeah, well, my.
Or insourcing work? One of those things.
I insourced work to myself.
That's what I meant.
By asking friends how I could do this whole video editing thing, because now there's software for it and it looks pretty cool. And they taught me and they gave me tutorials. So I'm self-taught on all that stuff back, you know, when Final Cut Pro first came around. So I borrowed equipment and I made a documentary because I figured I don't need a script or I don't mm-hmm. need to pay anybody. It could just be super cheap. I can mm-hmm. borrow stuff.
And the name of the documentary?
Superheroes, We Work for Tips.
Yes.
Which is good and bad. It was great and it's out there and you can find it on YouTube. But then someone came along and made Confessions of a Superhero and they had
I
more
know.
Money. They
yeah.
had connections to the folks
because
who produced
it was
Half
about
Nelson.
The
they knew
same
Morgan Spurlock.
Thing. Yeah.
I didn't.
So yeah.
The short just kind of stayed a short.
Yeah.
These guys expanded it.
Is it online if somebody wanted to watch it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
yeah. You can
yeah.
go to Superheroes.
And explain.
Search Superheroes Work for Tips. It should come up. I think it's the only thing named that out there.
Yeah. And explain what it's about. It's about the folks that.
The folks who stand out in front of Grauman's Chinese Theater, dressed like characters, and mm-hmm. And ask for tips.
Ask for tips to
actually,
take a
they can't
with
ask
them.
For tips. They say, I think that's it. We do photos for tips. They can't say, give me a dollar.
They can't charge
yeah.
for it.
They can't say that's $2.
Yeah. It could be a donation or a gratuity.
And last time I was down there, it was about $5, which there's inflation in that world. It's just amazing. But anyway, these folks talk
yeah.
to us. There's a Superman, a Batman, Wonder Woman, and a Spider-Man, and they're all just very unique individuals, let's just say.
So you –
went to festivals and had fun with
oh,
it.
Oh, yeah?
Yeah. So before
How was
the
reception?
Before the feature came
How
along.
Was the reception for
Great.
It?
You yeah. know, and I would get involved in Q&As, and everyone would say how much their movies cost, $10,000, $4,000. You know, mine cost, I think, like $50. It cost more to
wow.
enter the festival than to
That's
borrow
amazing.
Borrow the software, borrow the camera, and uh-huh. then buy two mini DV tapes, you know?
Now – Did you
I made copies of release
on...
forms, I guess. That was maybe, you know, another 30 cents.
Did you do this all on your own? Or did, like a crew-wise, or did you have someone there with you helping
One
you?
Other guy, my friend Rob.
Yeah?
Yeah, the two of us made it.
Oh, that's amazing. And then you did all the editing.
And I did all the editing, yeah.
Yeah. How long,
Got
like, say, if you were
music,
to go out
so.
And do the very same thing right now, the very same documentary, same length and everything, how long do you think with your skills now that it would take you to edit it now than it did when you first shot it?
Because it would be much sharper than it is now. I'm looking at some of those cuts, you know, like, but it would take a couple of days probably to edit.
That leads me to my next question is, do you think that's why George Lucas keeps messing with the old movies?
Maybe, yeah. I guess. I mean, I don't know why he does that.
Scorsese
says, you know, after a while, you just got to let him go.
Yeah.
I mean, I'm sure he'd love to tinker with his movies, but he never has. He's like, no, after a while, it's just done.
You do have to let it go. Yeah, you really, really do.
And now, I trust Martin Scorsese. I mean, the guy knows what he's doing.
He's okay.
he's got some skills.
Just all right. Let's talk about your podcast, the Movie Guys podcast. Why don't you explain what that is?
Well, I've always written movie reviews, kind of just for fun.
Mm-hmm.
And then with the internet, my wife said, you should put those up for people to see instead of like emailing them around and bothering everybody's email.
Oh, is that what you were doing? You were
Once a month I'd send out an email. Here's a bunch of reviews I thought of, and then people write back their thoughts. And eventually it's like, hey, just put these up on a site.
Uh-huh.
And create your own site. So we started themovieguys.net.
Mm-hmm.
And then we realized after a while, this is pretty much just a comedy site. You know, most of our thoughts on movies are funny. We write jokes about everything. And then we started doing a video that we'd put out every week that previewed everything that was coming out that week. A choice that I've liked from early on, because when we preview every movie that comes out, we get to talk about everything. But we only watch what we want.
That's
so we can
smart.
Talk to death, Dolphin Tale 2, don't have to see it.
Yeah.
Fine with that. I'm okay with that.
You do everything based on a trailer that you've seen.
Yep. If we read anything else, if IMDb is any interesting stuff to talk about. You know.
Right.
Then that became a live show at Second City. Ran that for a couple of years. We'd do that once a month. That would just make jokes about all the movies. And we'd write sketches and involve it. And really, this is the best form that it's in right now. It's something called the Movie Showcast. Because it's a podcast, but it's really a show.
Right.
Because we don't just, say, hey, well, think of something funny to say, you know, every week about this or that movie. We have a real good structure where we preview everything that's coming out. This week, you know, this week we'll be talking about Ouija and St. Vincent, which is going into wider release this week. And
which has one of your favorite actors.
Has Bill Murray in it. Yeah, but Bill Murray's great. And now everyone knows how great he is, which is the best because... Everyone knew, everyone liked him, but now everyone knows that he's pretty much the coolest guy on earth, which is just great.
Mm-hmm.
So we do that, and then we have different segments that recur, you know, where we cover movie news, which we really don't do so much. We leave that to folks like yourself. You're on the cusp and, you know, in touch with all the latest news.
I try.
Yeah, but we just do a big old comedy show. We have a special guest every week. We've had some really good ones, like Audrey Kearns.
Oh, she's awesome.
Oh, yeah.
She's amazing.
Right on up to like Ted Raimi and Ike Barinholtz and Joel Murray. We've had tons of good guests on the show. So it's a whole
And you have a set group of co-hosts with you, right?
Yes, my wife Karen Volpe and Lee Caius and Adam Witt.
Right.
Every week, give or take, you know, folks get busy. And
how did you, was that like just, I mean, obviously you know your wife, at least I hope you do. With the other two guys, are these people that were in your peer group and it just evolved into a show, or are these people that you met through putting the show together?
Yeah, Adam and I go back to Chicago. Karen and I obviously go back to college. So, Karen and I came together because we love comedy. Like in college, we would do old SNL sketches,
right?
You know, and for everybody else, just for fun.
Yeah.
You know? And then we'd write some originals, and we're like, hey, we like kind of writing and doing this. We're kind of like we dig on Nichols and May. We like Hilda Radner and this whole thing. So, she's always been there, and she could jump right into doing comedy about movies as much as anything else. And she's in love with Bill Murray. So this will be a big week for her. This will be a big week for her. And Adam and I just got together in the comedy scene in Chicago. Mm-hmm. We lived there for a spell before we left Cold Places. And bonded on movies a lot. I mean, we saw Speed 2 Cruise Control together. I think from then on, we were friends.
If you can sit through that together.
Yeah, but that was the summer we're like, we're going to see everything. No, we don't do that. although he still calls
me. Now you do a show on preview.
He still calls me a completist. I still try and see everything. But
right.
I missed the Turtles movie. So,
do you enjoy, you sound like, and I'm a little like this too, where, you know, you just love the art form of the movie and everything a movie stands for. Are you, when you do see movies, are you a harsh critic or do you go in there to be entertained and you know the difference between like a popcorn movie and a movie that's supposed to change your life? And do you have the same attitude every time you go into
a
movie?
I'm not a big fan of popcorn movie. A lot of people use that phrase and I think it gives the movie a pass. You know what I mean?
It does. It absolutely
does.
Don't you
agree? Yeah. So I hold it to a very high standard, I guess, you know, and, but you know, within your genre.
Yeah.
Like Guardians of the Galaxy. I know what they have to do in that genre. They don't have to hit me like Whiplash did. Like that movie's fantastic.
Whiplash?
And a kick to the head. It's this great movie coming out with Miles Teller and J.K. Simmons.
Oh, I love J.K. Simmons.
Picture him in a lead role where he's awesome. That's what this is. And you will just be full when it's over. It's really good. But it's a searing drama with like intense dialogue and guys butting heads the whole time. It's about a kid in a jazz ensemble. And J.K. Simmons is the jazz ensemble conductor and mentor. And he's straight out of Full Metal Jacket.
My friend just posted something. He went to a screening on that. And he just posted on Facebook how wonderful it is.
It's fantastic.
Now I know what you're talking
about.
But
I know that Guardians of the Galaxy is going to hit me with that punch.
Yeah.
I know what it's going to do in its genre, so I just wanted to do that, and it did.
Yeah.
You know.
So knowing what you're going to see before you sit down.
Yes, that's tough to say too because I love being surprised.
Okay.
You know,
I'm talking
Gone
about
Girl.
Like genre wise.
Yeah.
Genre wise.
Right.
Yeah.
Gone Girl, though, halfway through the trailer for that movie, doesn't prepare you for what's coming.
Oh, really?
In the best possible way. That movie is about a whole bunch of stuff you don't know anything about, and it's great.
Lovely.
If I may throw my grade again.
You can.
I'm just I'm full of deep critical words like great and awesome.
That's our $5 word. I look it up on the dictionary. It's spelled G-R-E-A-T, right?
Unless you're talking about cheese.
then it's G-R-A-T-E.
Indeed.
But we're talking about E-A-T.
We're teaching.
So with your podcast, you film as well as do just an audio version. Right?
Yeah, we put it on YouTube. It's a 90-minute show, so we don't get many hits there, to be honest, because it's just not a format that YouTube addled brains can manage.
Yeah, and if someone's listening to it on YouTube, I'm sure they're walking around cleaning the house. You know,
yeah,
I'm just saying
it can be on in the background if you don't know how iTunes works or something. but iTunes, where we get the most hits, I think people download it and then you can listen in the car and all that, whatever.
Yeah,
SoundCloud as well. Podbean. We throw it out there and then get a nice return.
Yeah. It's comedy show, like you said.
Yeah. I mean, we're not like the guys who know all about movies, or we're not the regular guys or whatever. We're basically just trying to make you laugh, and we do that through movies because we love them and we want them all to be great, but they're not all going to be, so we have some fun.
Well, do you still do any kind of acting?
Oh yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, I go out audition when I can, and
right
now I've got a pretty great agent that's getting me out more than usual.
That's awesome.
So that's cool. I was on Instant Mom earlier this year, Nickelodeon, so no doubt
you're here.
No doubt you recognize this voice because I didn't say anything. But
I saw that two things I saw online because I was, even though I've known you for over 10 years, I was like, well, I should at least look him up in case there's a couple things I don't know about Paul. And you've done a couple soap operas. What's it like on a soap opera set?
I will tell you this. Those actors are nothing to talk down about.
Because they're like memorizing shit every single day.
And they got, when you look at a set for a soap opera, in every one of those drawers in the desks, there's a script. And cut! They're pulling it out and they're looking at everything. They're looking at the latest changes. They get a lot to ingest and a lot to then spew back out.
There's probably rewrites going on right then and there, too.
And the fact that they do it with the gravitas or whatever is required seconds later is pretty impressive.
Yeah.
I mean, I was impressed when I watched those guys go to town. I'd come in with my 2 or 3 lines as a bodyguard or whatever, and I'd be fine. But those guys, I was always pretty impressed. And, and there's some great Shakespearean-trained folks on there who were just, doing great work. But the story is not my thing.
Right.
But I will always be impressed.
That's great.
On the set.
I also, let me pull this up on my computer. I also found out something else about you online. Hang on. Let me pull up the Googles here. I put in Paul Preston on Wikipedia, and evidently you were born in Liverpool in 1946.
Damn that
and
guy.
You're a historian and a Hispanist, and I had to look up Hispanist or Hispanist.
So enlighten me. I don't know what I am.
Evidently, you write about Hispanic history. You've done a book on Franco and a lot of Spanish stuff. I didn't know. First of all,
Franco was on General Hospital, by the way.
I know he was. I didn't know that you were that old. And you said, damn that guy. So you've seen this before?
That, you know, everyone can search their name. And if, with a name like Audrey Kearns, you probably come right up. You're the first one. Paul Preston is out there in other fatter British forms.
And so this guy, I mean, he's got like 5 or 6 books out. And
He dominates the Google search. It's not fun.
You know what? I think I'm the oldest Audrey Kearns out there. So I got to everything first, or the first one to like do something media-wise, because I started to see, because I am an actor and I do have a modicum of ego and I do have to Google myself every once in a while. There, I said it. Okay. Deal with it. there's another Audrey Kearns in Ireland, which makes sense because Kearns, the literal translation is Irish foot soldier. She's doing a bunch of blogs and like journalism in, or trying to be a journalist in Ireland. And so I'm wondering if when she looks
she's trying, bless her heart.
She's young and she's probably going to be incredibly successful, but I wonder if she goes to look for her stories and she Googles herself and sees me and does the same thing. Oh, fuck her.
Yeah, with her Klingon shit and everything.
I am not Star Trek stupid. What the hell? But there was one other one that's that was actually successful in the Bay Area, who is like the head of some kind of like, I'm going to say longshoreman, but it's not longshoreman, but the head of that kind of union, like a labor union or something. And she seemed a lot smarter than me.
Which can also piss you off.
You can go to Google Images and you can see a really official picture of her. And then you can see a picture of me with Vulcan ears in a Star Trek costume.
Exactly.
So I don't know which one you can take
more
seriously.
Yeah, well, I've worked hard on the movie guys, where if you search the movie guys, I mean, we come right up, which is great.
Yeah.
But you can search like funny movie reviews and things like that, and we come right up, which is cool. So I'm working the SEO thing. I've done nothing for Paul Preston. So I'm still just kind of buried in there.
Well, you should. You should do some SEO for Paul Preston, absolutely. And they've got all kinds of widgets and plugins and all terminology like that.
Really?
I mean, do you run your own website or are you guys part of
I'm not much of a website builder, so I hired someone to build it, but I maintain it.
Yeah.
I can
someone
go
built
and
mine
that.
And I've done a lot of self-tutorials. And
on WordPress?
WordPress,
that makes
it
easy, right?
Yeah, WordPress is fantastic. It's got a great interface if you don't know that much about. And I've learned so much.
The funny part is I told you my site started with writing reviews, but I don't write as many as I used to. We got some great contributors. Justin Bowler, mutual friend.
Oh, yeah.
Ray Scalacci, a guy I met at the Phoenix Film Festival, writes great articles, not just reviews, but like whole thoughts on the horror genre. And he finds old movies.
Contributors are great, especially when you find someone like Justin or somebody that really loves what they're doing. Because like right now, Geek Girl Authority, it's just like no one's getting paid. I mean, we're doing this, you know, with love. And I've got a good friend of mine who just loves science.
Yeah.
And so he's just writing about space, like true science, not like science fiction science. He's writing like, well, this is what you're going to see in the Perseid meteor shower this month, and this is what you want to look for. And this is, you know, and then going, you know, doing a bunch of history, and I love it. And I've got another girl who...
going back to that guy, has he posted anything yet about the sounds from space? Voyager's sending back these sounds. Have you heard these?
No.
You got to hear these. These are actual sounds the Voyager has recorded and sent back. Space has noise. You're thinking like, oh, in space, no one can hear you scream. But these, like the rings of Saturn.
Is it like, oh, really?
Like it's
like a whale.
Yeah, it's cool.
That is cool.
There's space sounds that are out there.
So I was thinking that it'd be all staticky, so it's not staticky.
It varies. Different planets and rings and stuff have different sounds. Uranus sounds different than...
My anus sounds
one.
Very different than Uranus. Yeah, I did it. I couldn't help myself.
Yeah.
I'm sorry.
But it is not. It's probably for the sake of comedy that Uranus is the loudest. It is. It just is.
Are you
they
serious?
Played Saturn. They played Earth. They played all these. And it's like. It's crazy.
That is fantastic.
But have your friend look that up because
I
that's
will.
Worth
that sounds
about.
Like a great one. Now, Justin made me think of this. The last two. San Diego Comic-Cons are always very interesting, like the really big ones like San Diego and Dragon Con, because this has happened to me at both cons, where I'll run into somebody I haven't seen in years. Mm-hmm. Like I ran into someone at Dragon Con, this is after, and that's in Atlanta, and it was somebody I hadn't seen in 6 years that I knew from Florida, and we just kind of stood there, and he's like dressed up as something, and I'm dressed up as something. And I we hang out at Dragon Con every year now. But it's wild. And that happened in San Diego. I think it had been a couple years, a few years since I'd seen you. And I saw you and Justin just walking down the street. And it was just like, oh, hey. And then this year, I'm, you know, at
there I was with Stony Westmoreland.
Yeah. Yes, yes.
It was in, like a neighbor years, I think.
Yeah, but, I think I was taking pictures of a Lego Batman when I ran into
hey!
It. But
there's only 150,000 people here, or however many, maybe yeah. even more, and there I run into you. It's crazy.
I think that's so. It's yeah. it's so wild because you know you're cheek to jowl with everybody, especially in San Diego. It is intense, and then you see people you know. And
I love every second of it, by the way.
I love every second. And that's what I wanted to ask you. Like, say the first time I ran into you, you were doing Movie Guys at this time. You weren't yeah. doing the Showcast yet. And this past Comic-Con, you were there as a fan, like you always are, but also doing some press. Mm-hmm. And how was that? How was that different for you, having to work there and enjoy it at the same time? Or was it still like...
Work is enjoyable.
That's
yeah,
what
I mean,
saying.
What are we talking about?
Were you still playing?
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah?
Yeah. I mean, we got to talk to Robert Picardo and Mira Furlin.
That's amazing.
From Space Command, the movie that keeps going on and will yes. eventually come out.
It'll eventually know. Come out. Paul but, asked me to go to that set about a month ago.
Yeah.
We sat down with Mark.
I think they're
Dupree.
Done shooting, so now we can...
Yeah,
you can wait for post to get finished.
Yeah.
But the movie that keeps getting funded by Kickstarter and keeps
haven't,
not getting done, but hopefully
haven't seen
soon.
Anything from it. The yeah. guy is fascinating.
There's a trailer.
There is a trailer.
Yeah.
The guy, is Mark Zakrin, is absolutely fascinating, and he certainly loves what he does, you know. But still, Robert Picardo has a resume
great.
A mile long.
I could go to this panel on whatever yeah. or go talk to Robert Picardo.
I'm going to go. Yeah.
And he was charming and funny, and it was great.
Yeah. Yeah. How was
I would love to do more of that.
Mira
if I could do
Furlin.
A whole day of that and then yeah. the next day get back to my geekery, you know, I'm good.
In that kind of setting, was he doing interviews? Was it a setting where he was like expecting press to walk up to him, or did you just see him?
They were in a room and
okay.
we would go around from table to table for, you know, you'd go in and say who you wanted to talk to because they had the composer there and the VFX guy. And,
yeah.
And then you would just move around to... and. As soon as Robert was done talking yeah. to somebody, I was there, and he came over to talk to me.
Do you, like, kind of stand in line before you go sit down with them, or is it just kind of like a free-for-all? Or
they had times.
They had
so
times. Oh, that's great.
Yeah, you'd have a time. So I didn't wait too long. It didn't put a huge dent in my day, and that was like an hour
yeah.
of that day.
Yeah.
And then go back out and hit the floor.
Oh, that sounds great. How many Comic-Cons?
The tough part is having all my equipment with me, because then it's
oh.
like, because I wanted to do a video, and then I didn't do video. I just did audio in the end because I didn't want to lug everything around. You got to go back to the
yeah.
car, and the car's not close.
Did you
know,
see
get the good
a
parking.
Lot of people like making that mistake of bringing all their shit with them? I mean,
they had it, but it didn't look like a mistake. I don't know if they had
okay.
like a hotel room right there at the Hilton
oh,
or what,
right.
but I did not. So,
yeah.
yeah.
That's true, because I was 14 blocks away, so it was still walkable.
Right, so was I.
It was walkable, or they actually had the shuttle bus, but you would still have to take that with you, because I was taking my laptop every day because I wanted to do live updates and stuff. And I think on the, I think it was as short as the second day, I was just like, I can't do this. I even had like my iPad with a wireless keyboard and everything, but my iPad, you know, you can't do all the fancy things in WordPress that you can with your laptop. Mm-hmm. And so it was just like, at one point I'm just like, you have to leave the hotel room and you have to go enjoy Comic-Con right now. Do it
yeah.
right now.
Yeah. Oh, we were just talking about that before the show, because there was like 2 seconds where I could post something on Instagram.
Yeah.
Like, it's so hard to keep all that crap up and still
yeah.
enjoy yourself.
Yeah. Well, I've yeah. been, I'm looking forward to the day where I can do an interview like this and also Twitter feed, have a live Twitter feed in my mind.
Yeah.
Constantly.
All
tweeting and talking to you at the same time.
All,
yeah.
Whatever.
Microchips.
Yep.
In my neck. Be awesome.
Time will come. The time will come.
It's probably so close. I was talking to a friend the other day. I was at, I stayed at this, went to a wedding, and me and all my friends stayed at this motel. It was an older motel, and I went down to the vending machine. I didn't have any cash, and I'm thinking, you know, it's 2014. All vending machines take cards now, and it didn't, because that's not true. And I didn't have any change, because I pay, you know, you pay for most things with your debit card now.
Mm-hmm.
And I was thinking, if only I had a barcode, if I had a chip in my wrist, I could just wave in front of the vending machine just because I really want a Sprite right now. I just was craving a Sprite, and I never craved soda. But that moment, I mean, I was willing to break into it, but I didn't.
Surprise here, I'm bringing it back to movies, but Minority Report, that movie
yes.
was made by Spielberg, went to actual futurist think tanks to see
oh,
how
wow.
would the future look. So when you see things like But did they, I don't know if they had barcodes that paid for shit in that, but it seems like something they would have.
Yeah.
But things like Tom Cruise moving things around in a holographic screen in front of him with his hand. And we're so close to that. I mean, Iron Man isn't far away.
Yeah, we're so, and like every sci-fi television show, they have that now. Yeah. All the superhero shows.
All the retina scan marketing of Tom Cruise walks through. Yeah.
And I totally buy
not
that.
Not far from that.
Like when he walks by he's completely getting scanned, not only for marketing, but for any dangerous, you know, materials or stuff like that. I was like, oh, we're so close to that shit.
Yeah.
You know, it's there's that whole argument. Is it invasive or do you care because you're a good citizen? And there's it's just. Like, I don't know if I'd ever be able to put a chip in my arm, but at the same time, I love convenience.
Right. I got 2014 over the weekend, too, because I went to the beach and I went to the parking meter. I was like, oh, it takes coins? I don't have any coins.
Come on. Who has coins anymore?
Like, I only heard about the fact that they take cards like a couple of months ago.
And now it's already hardwired.
It's totally Louis C.K. type of thing. Yeah.
So, you know, You have your podcast about movies.
The movie showcast,
Movie showcast,
at themovieguys.net.
Mm-hmm. And it can be found on iTunes.
Stitcher,
Podbean, you say?
Yeah.
I say. Does that overtake any television watching for you? Are you a fan of television?
If I have 2 hours, I'm going to go to the movies.
Okay.
This is the best time of year.
There's a lot of good TV out there.
There's great TV out there. Yeah. And it's kind of depressing for a movie guy because a lot of it's better.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, I'd rather watch that 9-hour Breaking Bad movie than 2 hours of, something stupid.
Actually, I
wish I could come up with something stupid faster, but it's actually a good time of year for movies.
It is.
Kill the Messenger. Now that looks pretty good. Whiplash. Oh, that was great. Birdman looks fantastic.
What is the week? Is this the week that starts, or is it in November where it's just like
it's already started.
It's already started.
There's Q&As, screenings out there already. They're making pushes for actors
in
certain things.
I like this time of year because my husband's in the Writers Guild, and we're going to start getting the screeners. I mean, we get them for SAG anyway, but it's nothing compared to the number that he gets for the Writers Guild, and I just can't wait.
Yeah, he gets everything.
But, you know, a lot of the Writers Guild movies are going to be the thinkers, though. So, I mean, you're not going to get, like, the superhero movies and all that kind of stuff, you know. So it's usually stuff that I haven't seen, which is great. Because it's always so disappointing when you open up your screener and it's like, I've seen that.
Well, I just burned through True Detective.
Yeah.
That show was amazing.
Yeah.
That show is a movie because, well, they're taking the time to, and you can see it. Like, I love network television, kind of. I love 24, you know, but you can tell even a good show like The Good Wife, when you watch it, you go, this has got that sheen of network on it. Where, like, True Detective just said, let's just be ugly, you know, and it paid off. That movie has a feel about it that just leaves a stink on you. I called it a movie just now.
It's
a TV show.
Because it felt like a movie.
Really good.
And well, there's so many variables that allow True Detective to do that. You know, they're not a major broadcast network, and HBO just, you know, they really get good people working for them. But there's also, you know, like you said, this standalone nature. And when it comes back next year, it's a completely different story. You know, who's cast? Colin Farrell
and Vince Vaughn.
And Vince Vaughn are the people we know so far. And it's going to take place somewhere in California this time around.
Yeah, there was a big female name, I think, flirted around with, too. I can't remember who.
Was that confirmed yet, though?
I wish I remember who it was.
But. Me, too. But BBC's been doing this for a long time where there's, you know, they're not doing 22-episode seasons. You know, that's the great thing about a lot of cable shows now. They've cut their seasons down to 10 episodes, and that makes a big difference in the quality of work. You're doing 22 episodes a season, then you are going to get that, you know, the network in there. And a lot of these BBC shows, they're just doing 4 or 5 and then they're out, and it's, you can sit there and watch it in one day or watch it over a weekend or however you like to watch it. And like you said, it's like watching a movie, and that's coming up this next year. They're doing a lot of that on, they're starting to do that on broadcast television. They're buying a bunch of scripts and they're calling it, they've labeled it
they got a thing
it's
for it.
A series event, or it's a, they're not calling it a miniseries, which
I think they already did that with Flashpoint. That's not what it's called, but the new Anna Gunn show, Grace Point,
which is
miniseries event.
Yeah, and I'm sure it's good. I'm not watching it because I saw Broadchurch, which is the same actor and it's the same story, and now they are doing it the American version. And except that was called Broadchurch, and they changed it a little bit and called this one Grace Point.
They kept the syllabically, it's the same.
I guess so. But yeah, it's a detective story. It's one case. You know, it's like The Killing. The Killing came every year with 10 episodes on a different, had the same two detectives, but a different case. And I think that's more intriguing.
Yeah, well, different genre, but Ricky Gervais, I mean, when he does his show and it's a huge hit, two seasons and he's out.
He's done.
I don't have another great idea. And he, sure enough, he had Extras in him.
Yeah.
And that's a great show.
I love Extras.
Two series and he's out.
Yeah.
There are two seasons and he's out. So, you know, sometimes it pays to just not overstay your welcome and just kill and go.
Yeah.
And to drop the mic and off, walk off stage.
Yeah. And then you do have those people that are able to keep it going. But then I look at the ones that I like the best, and they are the shorter season ones, like Breaking Bad, Walking Dead. I mean, you get, I think all those are, was Breaking Bad like 10 episodes?
This last episode of Walking Dead was 17. So, yeah, they had
Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, I didn't realize
it
that.
Might have been broken up into two, but on Netflix, I watched them all.
And then like sci-fi.
Watched them all in a week.
Sci-fi, they'll do with some of their shows, they'll do 10 episodes and then take a four-month break and do another 10, but it's considered the same season.
Yeah.
It's like, yeah.
Is it? Do they get anything good going on over there?
I like Defiance. I'm a big fan of Rodney O'Bannon, who's the writer. He did Farscape. You know, I love him. And Farscape had... Brian Henson's company.
Oh, cool.
Jim Henson's son did a lot of the puppets. I was about to call them Muppets for that show. And Farscape's amazing because two of the cast members were puppets. And after the first episode, you never thought of them as a puppet again. They were so wonderful and realistic that, you know. Mm. And Rodney O'Bannon, he has great mythology and his show. So anyway, Defiance. They've got Ascension coming up. Don't know if that's going to be any good, but I'm looking forward to that. And they're doing, I don't know if you know this, you know they're doing 12 Monkeys?
I do know that.
Yeah, they're doing a series.
Yeah, I know some people were cast in that.
Yeah, so.
I hope that's good. I suppose you could take that concept and do a lot with it.
Yeah.
Going back.
They haven't had a good space one in a while since Battlestar.
Yeah. I guess you're right. I never watched the
Capricorn. And Stargate. I was in Stargate. They both left the air.
Bringing it back to movies, as I do. Labyrinth sequel. You down?
I thought that was not going to happen.
Oh, no? I've only heard murmurings about it.
Well, there's like...
Again, we're not into movie news. We're just more into comedy.
Oh, I'm totally down with the Labyrinth sequel. And it was all the buzz on the internet. And by the end of the day, everybody was updating their blog posts saying that this is not happening.
Oh.
This is not confirmed. And it was just... a comment that was taken, you know, that people got way excited about a comment, and you know, that somebody made.
I could give or take it.
Yeah.
You know,
yeah.
When you see a movie like Inception, you just say to yourself, God, every once in a while, it just really pays to like ditch the sequels.
Yeah.
It's like, and now he's putting out Interstellar, and I know that's going to be something we've never seen before.
Oh,
in our
gosh.
Lives.
I've seen three trailers from that movie, and I just can't wait.
Oh, no,
I just can't wait.
Always bringing
and
the big guns cast-wise.
Yeah, and you can tell it's got, like, same with Inception and all of his movies. His acts, A-C-T-S is what I'm trying to say.
Mm-hmm. He doesn't play guitar?
He doesn't play an axe. He doesn't bring his axe on set and get down like Slash. By the way, do you know what slash fiction is?
Slash fiction?
Yeah, I just learned this.
No.
Totally different.
Yeah, we're jumping around.
Slash fiction, you hear it, I'm like, oh, it's going to be a horror thing, like slash 'em ups or something like that. It's a thing that started in the 70s where people, it's like kind of like fan fiction, I believe, where people like you and me were writing hookups by characters that would never get together. Like, and it was called slash fiction because it would be Kirk slash Spock. And the slash was kind
of
like, that's how you knew, oh, it's that kind of fiction. You know, and they did it with Tasha Yar and Data and all kinds of, not just of the genre, but any character. And that's slash fiction. I just learned that and wanted to share that with.
Has anyone ever taken slash and paired him up with somebody?
Well, that's the funny
slash
thing.
Slash fiction with slash.
I did it.
And Seven of Nine.
But the thing is with slash, I was talking about this last night. I had done a live show last night and there was a sketch we were doing that had slash fiction in it, and somebody had stopped the rehearsal and said, hey, can you explain to me what slash fiction is? And then the other person, there was a third person there, and after it was explained, we were like, oh, okay. And the third person there was quiet for a second. He goes, oh, so it's not people that the actual slash is hooked up with.
Because that's...
Because you would believe it wouldn't be fiction because you kind of believe right. that he would hook up with everybody.
And we could come up with about 100 stories.
Exactly. Yeah. And they'd all be true. But back to Interstellar.
Yes.
Christopher Nolan, his act breaks. I mean, I can tell that they're going to be very strong in this movie. I mean, there's going to be the whole Earth part, the family part, the relationship part, and then there's going to be the exploration part. And then the third act, I don't know if he does a five-act script or a three-act script, but yeah. I love that. I love those epic movies that are going to have really big changes in the movie. You're really going, you're really going places, not literally. Obviously, they're going to another planet, but I mean,
solar system,
they're covering
they're
covering a lot of ground, and it just looks beautiful. His stuff is just always so beautiful.
Yeah, because he doesn't just bring the won't this be fun. I mean, there's always consequences.
He's gonna make you
and
think
weight
about it.
And
I think about it with a lot of directors are like that. I love Danny Boyle. He's one of my favorites too.
And, he's great.
What's his? Not many people got on board with this movie. I think it was a critical success. I loved it. What's the one where they're going to the sun to restart it? Solar? No, it's got Chris Evans in it and.
You're stumping a movie guy on the
Cillian
air.
Cillian Murphy.
Cut this part out. No.
Cillian Murphy. Oh God.
Yeah.
It has something to do with the sun, like solar or sun. Okay, gosh.
Wait, it's not Danny Boyle, is it?
It is Danny. No. It's the... Wait. Yeah. Hang on. I'm going to look it up.
Please hold
while we
look stuff up on the internet because...
Did Danny Boyle do the one... After Train Spotting, that was in Bangkok with Leo DiCaprio.
The beach?
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay, then I do think it is him, but we'll find out. I guess I'll look up.
They're kickstarting the sun?
Yeah. So Earth is frozen over.
Man, I want to see it.
In this movie.
I would think you're talking about the core, but you're not.
Oh, God, no.
Earth, any excuse to bring up the core.
The premise is, it's really, and it, you know, I have this fascination with dystopic movies, dystopian.
There's no shortage.
There's no shortage nowadays. There's some really bad shit out there too. And it's kind of, but that's, I'm kind of an angsty, dark person anyway, so it makes sense. But the world's frozen over because the sun's dying, and they've already sent a ship to...
I know what you're talking about now.
Okay, but the ship failed, and this is the second group that they've sent to basically, they're hoping they can
sunshine?
Come back. Sunshine.
Is it sunshine?
It is sunshine. I'm confirming on the Googles. Sunshine. And Danny Boyle.
Hey,
I win.
I win. I got the title.
You got the title, but you weren't sure about the
director.
Is
Sunshine also a Ralph Fiennes movie? Maybe that's what confused me.
Maybe. But it's got a great cast.
Because they don't stop movies from having the same title, which is completely bizarre.
No.
Until you're like Lee Daniels.
Yeah. Well, I was just, there's a new, well, I guess that's a line of poetry. I'm back to poetry now. There's a new Doctor Who episode this week called...
Leave it to the Geek Girl Authority podcast to bring it back to poetry again.
I know. Come on. That's what we're about. There's a Doctor Who episode coming up this week called In the Forest of the Night. And I'm thinking, there's a William Blake poem called The Tiger, which has that line in it. And you may think, wow, God, she's super smart. But the fact is, I don't know anything about poetry. It's just that Sister Joan Grace in seventh grade at St. Mary's Catholic School made us memorize a poem a week, like full poems. And it was really hard for a lot of the kids. I mean, because we're like all 12 at this time.
Wow.
Like
you hang on to those, right? You still know them, right, don't you?
Yeah, that's the thing. And the thing is I was great at that because I've got memorization skills that are really good. It's just my mind is great with that kind of stuff. And it stuck with me that I was like, oh my gosh, let me watch this trailer for this Doctor Who episode. Sure enough, there's a tiger in it and it's in a forest. See, I'm right. And so I was writing my little, write up blog post, watch the trailer and doing my little, trying to wrap it around to the poem and Sister Joan and all this kind of stuff. And then I wanted to make sure that it was that poem and how to spell it and all this kind of stuff. So I looked it up on Wikipedia and there's a vampire novel called In the Forest of the Night. And so I was like, not to be confused.
And they're not the same thing. You verified that as well?
Yes, okay. I did. But they are taking from the same William Blake poem. And then I was about to make fun of it until I read more on Wikipedia that it was written by a girl when she was 13 who was quoting William Blake in her book. And it was well received. And I'm just like, wow, she was, when I was, you know, I was learning the poem, having to be forced memorized when I was her age, and she's already written a full
Audrey,
novel.
Audrey, give us some of that poem, please.
Tiger, tiger, burning bright in the forest of the night. And that's really all I remember, that one. Here's another one. I wandered lonely as a cloud. Shit. It just slipped.
I'm that sure flooded. Oh shit was not the next word.
I over hills and vales when all along I saw a host. Oh, I'm messing it up. That one's a Walt Whitman one. A host of lonely daffodils beside the lake beneath the trees, fluttering and dancing in the breeze.
Pat! You just got wrapped across the knuckles by
a
ruler. Sorry, it wasn't fast enough.
My sister Joan. Yeah. Oh, God, that stuff that stays with you is crazy. So.
But wait a minute. Let me ask you this.
Yes.
And this may going to help endear me to your geek listeners.
Okay.
Never seen
fine.
An episode of Doctor Who.
I think.
And now that I'm done with the last season of Walking Dead, I'm going to move on to House of Cards.
House of Cards is great.
I'm four episodes in and I love it. And I want to get back to it.
Yeah.
But should I go to Doctor Who or just stick with House of Cards?
I will always say yes. I will say this. Like, it's the same thing with Farscape, the Rockne O'Bannon show I was just telling you about. It's not for everyone. It's do you like British humor? It's very.
I grew up with it. I did watch a lot of PBS when I was a kid. Know, the Goodies.
Yeah, it's
and
Benny
Hill.
I'm sure you're a Monty Python fan.
Monty Python and every night.
Faulty Towers. Come on.
Yeah.
But there's a lot of silliness to it. But when it gets serious, it gets serious. And
they can balance those two well.
Yeah.
Sometimes, yeah.
I do think they can. And the interesting thing is they sacrifice more for the acting and the script than they do for the, now they have more money, but for the production. Whereas I think sometimes American television, I mean, it's gotta be perfect visual effects. It's gotta be, you know, so sometimes their space seasons and their sets and their monsters and their aliens come across as a little cheesy, but the writing is so well that you're able, I mean, if you know, it's like playing with your Star, take it back to Star Wars, playing in your driveway with those things. I mean, you can let your mind go to the place where you really do think the Daleks, you know, with the plunger sticking out of its nose, that robot is real and they're scary. And the Cybermen, which looks like a stereotypical 60s robot because, you know, that's what they look like in the old version of Doctor Who. And they really haven't updated those that much. So you have to be willing to accept that. But like my husband can take it or leave it. Sometimes he'll sit with me and watch it where I can't, I can't miss an episode. And sometimes he'll just be like, I don't get it. And sometimes like a couple episodes ago, I was crying. It was just so beautiful, you know? So I like it. I will say, cause I don't know your TV. I don't know if you'll like it, but I'm going to say yes. I'll tell everybody to try it out, you know, and start with the, this later reboot. Don't start in the 60s.
Right,
you
know, right.
Start with...
Those were always on. Yeah. My sister watched it.
Yeah.
When I was a kid.
Yeah.
You know, the dude with the scarf, right? That's
yeah.
what everyone says.
Well, Tom Baker is one of them. I mean, there have been, Jesus God, Paul, there's been more than the guy with the scarf. There's 12, we're on the 13th Doctor. No. And it's funny. It's fun.
I can tell you how many James Bonds are dead. A movie guy.
Who was I with that was over here that we did? Oh, I was doing someone else's podcast, so many podcasts. We got into this big James Bond thing, and he just said, I have to ask, did you like Moonraker? I just was like, I remember the whole movie. It was so bad. But when I was a kid.
Rest in peace, Richard Kiel.
He just passed away.
Yeah.
And Jaws. But when I was a kid, that was a movie that was just like, oh, my God. And when you revisit it now, because now you look at movies, do they hold up?
Oh,
do they not hold up?
I guarantee you it's stuck in the 70s.
Oh, it is.
Yeah.
It is. That one did not.
I said this a bunch about my favorite movie of all time, if you listen to my show, because I will go on about Raiders of the Lost Ark, my favorite movie ever. Great thing about that movie, in 1981, takes place in 1936, so it's not stuck in the 80s.
It doesn't
Moonraker
have to.
Is
yeah.
stuck in the 70s.
It is, because they're using that science and everything. But I'd say, yeah. I mean, I love Doctor Who. Start with Christopher Eccleston one, and then David Tennant, then Matt Smith, and now they're on Peter Capaldi. Those are the Doctors. I think they're in their eighth season that they've done, and they're all very different Doctors, you know, because every time the Doctor, I don't know if you know, the Doctor gets doesn't get reincarnated. He gets he dies and then he can come back to life, but he's like a different person. And the memories are in his head, but they're hazy, and so they've had four doctors in this latest reboot, four actors doing the doctor, and there's all this hubbub right now.
Doctor Who? Is that the deal, right?
Yes, Doctor okay. Who. And the latest doctor is this guy, this actor named Peter Capaldi. If you saw his face, you'd know exactly who he was. He's amazing.
Yeah, well, I've seen who all of those guys are, you know, and I've seen mm-hmm. them in other projects too.
Yeah.
So.
And I think
David Tennant, Fright
they
Night,
got
right?
a bunch of, I think David Tennant, who's like the biggest sweetheart, and I think he's what won all the young fangirls and fanboys over, just because he's so charming, and it was such a fun show. And when he got serious, he's such a great actor, mm-hmm. and he got really serious. And now, then they had Matt Smith, who's like this dorky kind of doctor, and now they've got this like really dark guy, and he's really dark, and he's really, because the doctor was not supposed to regenerate. He had used all his lives, but for some reason something happened. He was able to regenerate, but so he's just really angry. He's trying to remember everything, and he's really dark. And I'm really curious with all those younger folks, because it got a lot of like my nieces. They started watching it with Tennant when they were like seven, so they're what, tweens now, and I'm curious what they think of the new.
I would hope they can
guy.
Handle a transition yeah. into something a little darker. I think it would be tougher to watch a dark show and have a transition to something goofy.
That's true.
You know.
That's true. But yes, all that to say, yes, watch.
Watch Doctor Who.
Doctor Who.
Okay, now to the part where I have my wife do it with me. That's going to be tough. I can't believe she started watching Walking Dead because she's...
Well, she likes Ghostbusters.
She loves Ghostbusters, loves Bill Murray, loves dogs, loves Sandra Bullock and Hugh Grant. You know,
what did she... It's not too... Does she not like violent stuff? Is that why you said that about Walking Dead? Or is it the zombie factor?
She hasn't said anything about the violence, but she got right into it when she just picked up on those relationships, right?
Yeah.
About when Lou Temple was there.
Yeah. Well, and they're great. That's what's keeping the show. It's a great relationship. I mean, it's based on a great set of comics and everything. And then Gail Ann Hurd is running. She's the showrunner now, and yeah. It's Greg Nicotero, which in Paul and I's show that we used to work at a theme park. We
yes.
did a show about movies, and we actually had to talk about Greg Nicotero.
Did,
this is like 10 years
ago.
Yeah. Yeah, he did the makeup, and now he's like way
in charge. Now, yeah.
Yeah, he's like way in charge of that show now.
Yeah, you can see sometimes when there's like a completely gratuitous shot of
yeah.
like a knife going into a zombie,
you're like, Nicotero.
Up the chin, and then
yeah.
the eye gets stuck on the knife and pops out the
yeah.
socket. You're like, oh, he's directing.
Yeah, he's directing this one. Absolutely.
Yeah, fun.
So, you told us where we could find you on the interwebs. And what about Twitter?
At The Movie Guys.
And
yeah.
what's your...
Facebook.com/TheMovieGuys and at The Movie Guys on Twitter. The Instagram is at The Movie Guys. We managed to get all of those. We didn't have one of them for a while until someone else calling themselves The Movie Guys just stopped doing it for whatever reason.
Oh, my God.
But I don't know why
yeah.
you stopped doing it, because you keep making movies. So
yeah.
as long as movies come out every week, we'll keep putting
You'll
out a show.
You'll be there. What so. About, do you have your own Twitter feed, Twitter handle?
At PrestonLA.
PrestonLA. Do you
yeah.
keep that
Not
one
much
up?
Going on there. See,
so,
that's the thing.
Yeah.
If I get that going, then maybe I can
then
beat
gotta,
that fat historian guy.
But I'm trying. I have two. I've got mine and Geek Girl Authority, and I'm running both of them. And I post like a lot of the same shit on both of them. And so I'm trying to be careful because...
Yeah.
Why would you want to post it? Why would people follow both if you're just posting the same thing? So I'm trying to, it's a weird
It is
balance.
Tough. And on Facebook, it's even tougher because Facebook's pages don't go out to everyone who follows your page, which is
right.
stupid.
Right.
And then you have to pay if you want that to
happen. I was
going to
say, you can make it happen if
so then you
pay.
Then you want to like know. Share it on your personal mm-hmm. Facebook so it goes out to all of your friends. So at least like hundreds of people will see it or thousands
yeah.
or however many. Instead of like 28.
Well,
you know?
The thing
and
is.
And then some people get things twice and you feel like you're annoying them, but
exactly.
hey, this is your lifeblood, right?
Yeah.
This is your passion, right?
Yeah.
Audrey?
Yes.
Geek Girl
Authority
is your thing. You gotta get them to see it. Who gives a damn?
You know, but,
that's what I've come up with recently. Like.
Well, you're right. And it is harder on Facebook. I mean, especially the last couple of years, they've, you know, well, it's been a long turn where they're money based now, where when we had our first Facebook page for our storytelling show, Five Truths and Lie, you can get a bigger reach. But now, like you're saying, you know, you post an article, you check 2 days later, and it says reach 25 people. They're doing that on purpose.
That's
they're not letting people
post?
See it because they want you to boost,
boost
it.
Post?
It's like,
a
no,
post.
Man.
Why do I don't want to spend money on a post?
$5 to boost this post. The people that, and that's
not even a good boost.
And that doesn't mean that you're going to get a click either. Right. It, you know, it's just an impression. Anyway, enough about that.
Anyway, facebook.com/themovieguys, @themovieguys on Twitter and Facebook.
Thank you, Paul, so much for coming to do my podcast.
My pleasure. I like talking movies.
Yeah, I can. I know it.
I'm glad movies fall into the geek world.
Yes.
So then we could come together.
Yes. Well, you're also, you know, we didn't talk about much, but you're kind of a geeky guy. You like geeky stuff.
I do.
Yeah.
I can get into
it. I mean, it's not all of who you are. Like, it kind of defines me.
Right.
You've got a bigger world of things you're a fan of than
yeah.
I do.
I could go on about Argo, you know?
Yeah. Well, thanks so much for coming by, and thank you so much for kneeling. I mean, we went on for an hour and 50 minutes. I think this may be my longest podcast ever, because
really?
We were just chatting. Yeah, I usually go like around 45 minutes.
Oh, wow.
I've gone an hour, I think, once before. And
must have been me asking you about Doctor Who.
And you got me on a tangent.
That's all I needed to do.
But, you know, usually people try to rush through because they're kneeling, and you didn't, so you took the pain well.
No, it's, a Tuesday afternoon. I'm in Los Angeles. I'd be kneeling anyway, so
yeah.
Why not do it here?
Thank you. Thank you.
Supplicants, you may now rise. The merciful Odd has chosen to spare you. Please exit the internet to your left.